Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket at will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
It's a very, very busy day, both locally and nationally for sports. Welcome into a brand new week of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, and hopefully we can fit everything in on the show today because we have news coming in from Major League Baseball all the way to the NFL and, of course, gearing up for another night of the NBA. The Major League Baseball trade deadline. It is now come and gone, and to my surprise, it actually was very active. But to no surprise, the biggest name that was moved was Mike Clevinger. And we talked about Clevinger last week. Where would he go? The Yankees? The Dodgers? Could a team maybe like Oakland add Clevinger? It was the Padres. And the Padres were extremely active today. This was the biggest blockbuster, no question. So the Padres, who are right behind the Dodgers in the National League West, they make the move for Clevinger. It was a six-player return for Cleveland. Cal Quantrill, Josh Naylor, Austin Hedges, Gabriel Arias, Joey Cantillo, Owen Miller, all headed to the Indians. Quantrill was 2-0 with a 2.6 ERA. And Josh Naylor will fill an immediate slot for Cleveland. Naylor can hit the ball, and I think it's a true testament to just how talented this Padre team is, because even with an added DH, Naylor wasn't getting any at-bats, which I really couldn't understand. So that was the big deal today. The Padres, and they made five moves, but grabbing Clevinger was by far the biggest, and this Padre team, they're going for it. They are absolutely going for it. Now, when you look at the two favorites from each league, the Dodgers and the Yankees, very little interest in renting players. Guys who are only going to be under team control for about the next month. And I think it was the same concept with a team like the Cincinnati Reds. Trevor Bauer, what was his trade value? What could you get for Bauer? Not much. And so a lot of these moves that took place today are guys that will be under team control for the next little while, but that was the big move today. Clevinger going to the Padres, and you know what? Again, five deals today for San Diego. They are going for it, and if you're a Padre fan, you absolutely have to love that your team says, let's go win a World Series. That's what it's all about, right? Forget prospects. I was talking to a buddy of mine yesterday, and we'll dive deeper into the Major League Baseball trade deadline in the next couple of days when everything is settled, players to be named and everything have been named. I was talking to a friend of mine last night, and he had a job within minor league baseball. Go back about 10 years ago, we worked with the Casper Ghost. That was the Colorado Rockies rookie league team. There were 300 National League guys who were rostered around that time in the rookie league, and there were only three of them that actually made it and played quality time in the major leagues. You think about that. So we put this huge emphasis on prospects. I say get rid of them. If you can win a World Series, deal them all. And I think the Padres did exactly that today. So I think the Padres are the big winner. No question they're the big winner. There's no doubt. Let's step away from Major League Baseball and we'll talk NFL for just a moment. Leonard Fournette is looking for a new team as the Jaguars have cut ties with him after three seasons. The writing was on the wall. They weren't going to be able to move Fournette for anything. And on top of that, they had declined his fifth-year option. So now Leonard Fournette, an unrestricted free agent, I believe he was due $4 million. But the rebuild phase continues in Jacksonville. And outside of that, Alvin Kamara, running back for the New Orleans Saints. He was a no-show today. Unexcused absence from training camp since Friday. And it's believed that this is all contract related. And so he is trying to make sure he gets a long-term deal with the Saints. It's a couple of news and notes from the national sports scene. Again, we'll dive into this in just a bit. Also coming up on the show, we're going to be joined by the new Carbon High School softball coach. This news trickled out over the weekend. Kurt Nunley, he's taking over at Carbon High School for the second stint of the girls' head softball job. We're going to talk about that actually next segment. Plus, a local sports recap is coming up. Very packed show. We're going to get off and rolling right after this.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
We're back on Drive Time Sports to talk local softball. Some exciting news coming out of Carbon High over the weekend. We have a new softball coach, Kurt Nunley. He was the coach about 4 years ago, and now he's back for his second stint. And he just happens to be joining us over the phone right now. Again, Coach Kurt Nunley joining us to talk about his new role as Carbon High School softball coach. And, Coach, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
I appreciate it, Jordan. Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm excited as well, Coach. It is official. You are now the new softball coach at Carbon High School. This will be your second stint as a head coach. And you and I were talking about that first stint just a while ago. What was it, Coach, that made you say, yeah, I want another run as head coach of the softball program?
Well, I missed it, Jordan. That's just the way it is. I missed it. I miss being around a team. I miss being, you know, a coach, being out for five seasons. When this job came open, I had a lot of encouragement from coworkers. I had a lot of encouragement from members of in the community. And I had my wife, she encouraged me to go do it. And, you know, with all the encouragement of all these individuals and my coworkers and my wife, you know, it was time to come back and get back on the saddle and be the coach again. And I can't wait. I can't wait to the season to get going.
Yeah, I know it seems like it's forever away, but it's really not. And we can talk more about the future schedule in just a moment. But, Coach, this go-around, I mean, you've been a teacher at Carbon High School for a decade and a half. And so for someone that has such a love for the game, I know you were an assistant coach for the baseball team as well. But softball, I mean, that's your forte, right? I mean, this is your passion.
It is. Yeah, it is my passion. You know, when I first got at Carbon High School back in the 2007-2008 school year, Tony Pinedo, he was the head coach at the time, and he was looking for assistance. And I told him, I said, well, I don't know much about softball, but I would love to, you know, learn the game and get into the game. I learned from him about the game. And so he offered me the job, and I was able to be his assistant for four seasons, and I learned under his helm. And then after Tony retired, then I ended up becoming the head coach for four seasons after that as well. And so I just love the game. I believe that softball is a game of competitiveness. It's obviously a team game. It's a team of strategy. And when you're in that kind of atmosphere, it just sucks you in, and you want to be a part of it. And so that's why I want to be back again as well, is just learning that and being able to be in those situations and be a part of that and make those kind of decisions.
Again, Coach Kurt Nunley, our guest right now, new softball coach of the Carbon Lady Dino squad. And, Coach, I know there's always a benefit of being a teacher and a coach. So you're around the kids. And so I would have to assume right out of the gate, there's not that awkwardness of getting to know the kids. I mean, even though you haven't been around a program for 5 years or so, you get to teach these kids on a regular basis. And so I'm sure that helps the process when you take over a program.
It's definitely a positive. I've got these kids in my physical education classes here at Carbon High School. I get to know them. And like you said, I'm not around the program. I don't know what they do in practices. I have went up to the softball fields when they've had home games and have sat in my vehicle and watched a few games the last few seasons. And and just supported them that way. But yeah, it is nice to be a coach at school. You know, you can be able to go into Mr. Bianco's classroom and talk to him, you know, where he's the AD of the athletic program, and that really helps too, having the, you know, the communication with the athletic director on a daily basis. So yeah, there's a lot of good benefits of being, you know, a head coach and working at the school.
Well, if we go back to your first stint, Coach, what are some of the things that you learned that now you can take a step back and say, okay, that's going to make me a better coach now that I'm back at it my second go around? What are some of those things that you learned that makes you a better coach now?
Patience. Patience is one. Communication is number two. I feel like, you know, when I took the helm before the first time, you know, I knew what I was getting into, but I didn't know what the extent of it was, you know, dealing with the business side of it all, you know, organizing a schedule and, you know, making sure that the girls have done all their payment and, you know, knowing how to deal with parents and the parents' concerns. And so I think this time around, the second time around, I feel like I'm a little bit more, well, not a little bit more, I know that I'm more prepared to deal with those kind of things that come up. I feel like I'm more mature now. I feel like I'm more prepared and ready to take it on again.
Well, as far as some of the elements that you want to implement as a coach, I mean, I guess what's the foundation? What are some of the things that are a requirement to play for Coach Nunley?
Well, the number one thing, if you look at it, Jordan, here at the high school, they're called student athletes. It's not athlete-student. It's student-athletes. And I'm a big believer of they have to be students first and athletes second. So they have to excel in the classroom. I mean, that's one thing that they have to do. Obviously, they have to be able to excel in the classroom to be able to play the sport. But I think that's a big thing when it comes to playing for me, is making sure that you're in your classrooms, you're doing well with your grades, you're being respectful to teachers, you're being respectful to staff members, and you're being respectful to your peers. I believe that is a huge problem that we're having nowadays is the respect. And, you know, to play for me, you got to be respectful. You just got to be a good person, a good citizen. And so, I believe if the girls are student athletes first, being respectful, being a good person, those are the main things that I look for. And those are the things that I feel like are part of my program and need to be a part of my program.
Well, you definitely have a great core coming back. I know there were not a ton of seniors on last year's squad, and even though the sample size was still very small, Coach, there's a lot of talent within this program at the moment. I mean, that has to excite you.
It does. It excites me. I've only, you know, I've really kind of just wanted to step away from the program when I did step away, and I feel like I did that pretty good. I have watched a few of their games, and... But to be honest with you, Jordan, I'm going in this with kind of a clear head. I've heard of that we're going to have a pretty good squad this year. Rumors have it, but I couldn't even tell you, you know, who's the catcher of the team and, you know, who's played third base last year, who played second, who played first. So this is going to be a fun experience for me because I'm going in. Really, really just kind of new and really wanting to know who the girls are and what their positions are or what, you know. And so it's going to be an interesting situation for me personally.
Well, Coach, I know when talking to you off of the cuff, you have put together a coaching staff as well, and it's a fairly experienced coaching staff.
It is. Yeah, it is. I have Butchie Vasquez, who was Coach Williams' varsity assistant, and he will also be my varsity assistant as well. Butchie Vasquez will be. I also have My former varsity assistant coach, and Dave Basinger, he will be back as well with me. This time, unfortunately, he's not going to be able to spend as much time in the program as he did before, and so he's going to come on a volunteer basis. He's not going to come on as a paid coach, but Dave Basinger will come on as a volunteer coach and be there when he can. And so I'm very grateful for those two men, and I know they have a lot of knowledge of the game, and I will learn from them. I know I will learn from them. I know I don't know everything. If you can put a good varsity assistants under you, a good assistant coaches under you, I feel that makes you a better coach, a better head coach.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, the old saying goes, head coach is only as good as his assistants. I think that rings true, especially at the high school level when you have so much other things going on.
Yep, it does. It definitely does make it your job a lot easier, too.
Yeah.
I'm the type of head coach that gives a lot of leeway to their positions, whatever they like to do. If one of them is better infield than the other, then I have that person do a lot of infield, because if they're very knowledgeable about that, then I give them free range. I give them a lot of free range on coaching. I believe that they're there to coach. They need a coach.
Well, I'm definitely looking forward to it, Coach. It's great to have you back at the helm. I really appreciate you taking out the time to join us today on air. Congratulations on being named head coach once again, and I look forward to the future conversations.
Appreciate it, Jordan. Thank you so much.
We're going to break for just a moment. We have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We'll move over and talk NBA basketball tomorrow. Game 7 between the Jazz and the Nuggets. We'll talk about that next.
I understand you're a real sports fan.
Well, then there's only one answer.
Turn on the radio. You'll never have to compromise again.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM at 750 AM.
We thought the series between the Jazz and Nuggets was done. Utah was up 3-1. Everything was going in Utah's favor, and it appeared that Denver had absolutely no answer. Now we're on the eve of Game 7. The Jazz season will hang in the balance. They'll return to the court tomorrow right here on KOAL, 6:30 tip-off between the Jazz and the Nuggets. We'll talk about that and more right now with our next guest, Jameson Welsh of BasketballNews.com. Jameson, I look forward to the conversations every Monday. Thank you.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me, as always. Definitely appreciate it.
Absolutely. Let's start by talking about the Jazz and the Nuggets. Again, 3-1 series lead. You and I had this conversation. I went on one of the leading stations in Denver and said, look, this series is over. Denver looked depleted. The Jazz had won 3 consecutive games. They were doing literally whatever they wanted. The only saving grace for the Denver Nuggets was Jamal Murray. There were reports that Mike Malone was losing the locker room. Right. Everything looked like it was doom and gloom. I thought this series would be over in 5, and now Denver has rallied off back-to-back wins. We get a game 7 tomorrow. What a bizarre series we've had so far.
Been a hell of a series. Both ways. You've had two guys emerge as potential consistent all-stars and potentially faces of this league. You know, Jamal Murray and Donovan Mitchell have been outstanding in this series. They've gone blow for blow. Both had 50-point games in this series. They've been going on. And their confidence is what I love. The confidence is amazing to see, because they've been at a point where it's a situation where, hey, there's not much you can do to stop them. Jamal Murray has a certain amount of confidence that's kind of scary, because we all knew the ability was there. Like, the ability has always been there. But they've always played through Jokic, and I've always had some reservations towards that, especially in close games, because you need a guy to make things happen off the bounce. You need a guard or a wing to make things happen in late-game situations. You need to go through that guy. Jokic, as good as he is, I remember when they had the play-in game versus Minnesota a couple years ago to try to get into the playoffs, and in other situations where they would force into Jokic, and that, to me, didn't seem like the best option just because he's very limited in that kind of setting. Jamal Murray's a guy, if you run everything through him, if Jokic is your secondary guy with his passing ability and his offensive ability, you're in great shape. And I think they kind of figured that out after game 4. But also, Jamal Murray took a situation, they were down early in game 5. I believe it was like 15. Like, they were down really big early. He took them on his back, and they haven't looked back since. So it's a hell of a series. It's also highlighting a couple of things for the Jazz. that have been a really big issue. When it comes to Rudy Gobert, his hands and catching the ball in close quarters has been an issue. And also finishing around the basket is a really big issue because he has guys in Donovan Mitchell and Joe Ingles that can break down a defense and collapse a defense. But when they pass to him, he's fumbling the ball or missing close-range shots way too easily, and that's a huge issue.
Yeah, when you talk about the offensive production for the Jazz, I know that was the biggest worry going into the playoffs. Would this team be able to score enough points? Last night, the Jazz score 107, realistically speaking, 107 points. It's just not enough to beat a team like the Denver Nuggets, and I worry about the bench production. Jordan Clarkson last night, 5 of 14, 1 of 6 from the three-point line, 11 points off the bench. Jordan Clarkson has a lot of pressure on him, I know, coming off of the pine, but this guy has to score anywhere from 20 to 25 because you're just not going to get a lot of bench offensive production from this squad. It's just the way they're designed.
Right, and he has to have it going for them to win. But also, you got to look at guys like O'Neal, Ingles. Those guys have to get it going as well because they get open shots, especially O'Neal. Like, he's a guy that I look at, and he's going to have to knock down a few shots in a game seven because they're going to rotate off of him. They're going to hedge towards Donovan. They're going to make sure that Donovan doesn't beat them in a game seven. So you're going to have open shots for the other guys. Those guys got to be able to knock it down. If they're able to knock it down, they have a good chance of winning. But if not, Denver, with the confidence they have, Denver has more talent right now. When you look at the rosters, they have more overall talent. And in a one-game situation, I'd favor them. However, if Utah's role guys can knock down the open shots and keep Denver's defense honest, they got a shot because Denver usually has two guys that aren't great defenders, or actually three guys when you think of Jamal Murray, that are not great defenders on the court. So when you've got that many bad defenders on the court, you have a really good chance, but you got to knock down shots and you got to make those guys rotate. If you're not knocking down shots, you're letting them off the hook.
Yeah, Utah, between O'Neal and Ingles in game six, 2 of 7 from the three-point line. I think between the two, they only took 8 shots. I mean, that type of production, that's unsustainable. These guys have to be a little bit more aggressive offensively. That's not even basketball 101. I mean, that's just looking at it. You could look at a box score. You don't even have to watch the game. You could simply look at a box score and say, this type of volume is just, I mean, it's completely, it's almost irresponsible when you have these two guys who are out there to shoot the basketball. I think 8 shots in game six.
Right. And those are starters. Those are guys that you actually need. Now, the one thing I'm looking for in a game seven is, one, can Rudy Gobert play like an all-star? And when I mean play like an all-star, he is an all-star center in this league. He's a great defensive player. On the offensive end, he needs to be close to 20 points. If he's getting that many close-range opportunities, he has to be close to 20 or right around 20. He has to. It can't be a 12-point game. Can't be a 14-point game. I need 18 and up from him. He's going to get me boards. He's going to get me blocks. But I need him to have an all-star center game. He's going against another all-star center in Jokic. He needs to be able to come close to the point production because you can't, in these situations, you cannot miss this many layups and think everything's going to be okay. It does not work that way.
Jameson Welsh, again, our guest right now of BasketballNews.com. We'll talk more about that in just a moment. Jameson, let's fast forward to what we have today. Miami-Milwaukee Game 1. I think this is a fascinating series. I know Game 1 between Boston and Toronto really didn't live up to the hype. Toronto laid an egg in that contest. I don't think that's going to be the case in this Miami-Milwaukee series. I think we have a very entertaining 6, maybe even 7 game set here.
We definitely can. I'm very curious to see Miami with pressure, because regular season games are one thing, you know. Mm-hmm. Regular season games, you know, sometimes a team's on the back end of a back-to-back or on the back end of a 3 games and 4 nights or 4 games and 6 nights, so it's really different. The playoffs are way different, you know. You're scouted differently. There's breaks in between games. There's a lot of different things in the playoff setting, so I'm very curious to see what wrinkles Milwaukee has for Miami and vice versa. But to me, it always comes down to Milwaukee's role players. If their role guys, including Chris Middleton, hit their open threes, no one can beat them because they're that good. However, we've seen when they miss those open threes, what happens. Like, that's their biggest issue. Defensively, they're fine as a team. They're really good defensively. But offensively, they got to hit their open shots. If they hit their open shots, they're as good as anyone in the league. But I have questions about some of the role players, and we're going to see this series.
You know, one of the things I was thinking about last night, looking at the Eastern Conference, and what makes this so interesting for me, because again, it is such a different situation than anything that we have ever seen, still being in the bubble, playing every other day. When you look at the four remaining teams, Mike Budenholzer, head coach of Milwaukee, Brad Stevens, head coach of Boston, Nick Nurse in Toronto, and then you look at Eric Spoelstra in Miami. Boy, this is fascinating, Jameson, because we're talking about four of the best coaches in the game still remaining in the Eastern Conference. And to me, that's an aspect that has been severely overlooked as we get down to the Final Four in the East.
Absolutely. And you got to realize this, too. Coach Budenholzer is a good coach. He's a good coach. However, the book on him is he can't get you to the next level. That's kind of the book. Last year, they were up 2-0. They had a chance to go up 3-0-1. Toronto, it didn't happen. In Atlanta, they got to the conference finals with a roster that they had. He's the guy that can get you there. He's very talented, but can he take that next step? We're going to find out. I have my doubts. We're going to find out sooner than later.
Let's move over to the Western Conference tonight. Game 6, Houston, Oklahoma City. This has been a great series. It's been weird. I mean, Houston wins the first two games. OKC wins the next two games. We kind of had a back-and-forth tilt for a little while in Game 5. Now we go to Game 6. There's no question which team has more talent. Oklahoma City, for me, has been the most surprising, best story of the season, including what Billy Donovan's been able to do, the resurgence of Chris Paul. Does it come to an end tonight, or do we get a Game 7 out of this series?
It's tough because when a team's in survival mode, guys tend to play with a little different urgency. I expect OKC to play with a certain type of urgency tonight to keep it close. However, if they got to score, OKC needs a 30-point quarter early. They need a 30-point or 28-point first quarter. Way too many times in this series, they've been in the teens after the first quarter or right around the dead, and that's just not enough versus a team like Houston. If they get off to a good start, they got a shot, but they can't let Houston get up 15 on them because now Houston's dictating the pace and the tempo. Houston can go high pick and roll with Harden. Either he gets to the cup or he's, you know, passing out the shooters, and that's a dangerous combination. So we're going to see what happens, but me, honestly speaking, I really think that Houston probably wins tonight. I think the game's going to be a lot closer than it was last game, obviously. OKC needs to mix some things up the way they're covering Harden. Harden's going to get his points regardless. Dort makes him work, that's fine. However, on the offensive end, there has to be some adjustments. There has to, because what's going on right now is simply not good enough, and Danilo Gallinari needs to step up. He's a guy that is a veteran in this league. He can shoot the ball very well. You got to get him going. You get him going, Chris Paul's going to be Chris Paul. You got a shot. But if not, it's fishing time.
Yeah, and you mentioned survival mode. Teams going into survival mode. And I was really surprised with what we saw from the Portland Trailblazers over the weekend, especially without Dame Lillard. I thought McCollum and Anthony, they played with a level of desperation that it was pretty entertaining to watch. I was so curious to see how teams with their backs up against the wall would perform, because the mental aspect of being in the bubble is completely different than getting another game and traveling or staying at home, right? So seeing teams play in survival mode for me was one of the more intriguing aspects going into the bubble. And to be honest with you, Jameson, I've been quite impressed with what I've seen from teams with their backs up against the rope so far.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's the professional. These guys are getting paid too. You know, these guys are professionals, so there's a certain way that they, you know, you're not trying to just get blown out. Like, no one's trying to get just blown out and go into your season with a 30-piece. That's just not, nah, these guys are going to play. You know, these guys are the best at what they do in the world. So nothing surprised me in that, right? I knew Portland was going to give it a shot. I thought they would roll over in the third quarter and be, you know, but they played tough. It just didn't work out for them. But the same thing with OKC. I expect Chris Paul's last game as a member of Oklahoma City Thunder, I expect him to go down with guns blazing, because we know what his contract and his situation. Don't see him on a rebuilding team that much longer. I see him going to a contending team one way or another. So whether his last game is today or on Wednesday or in the next series, I expect him to go down fighting, and we'll see what happens.
Jameson Welsh, you get a basketballnews.com. Jameson, it is always a pleasure to get you on and talk NBA basketball. Before I let you go, give me the rundown on basketballnews.com. I know this is an exciting opportunity for you, and you guys are doing some great things.
Yes, it's where athletes meet analytics. You have former coaches, former players, current players, other personnel giving insights on the game, giving their perspective. You'll have some video stuff as well. them breaking down plays, parts of the game. It's really cool. I actually have a podcast with James Posey called The Postcast. Should be debuting this Thursday. So yeah, we have some good stuff coming up. It's really cool.
Now, Jameson, I always appreciate you taking out the time to join us. Thank you again. Look forward to it next week.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me, as always.
We're going to break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We'll move over and talk NFL football right after this.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Beagles.
Let's move away from the NBA, and we'll talk football, both college and the NFL. You know, we had college football over the weekend. We have a lot coming up. In fact, 1 week from today, BYU is going to open up their season against Navy on the road. That'll be a nationally televised game. We have about 10 or so college football games this weekend, but some big news coming out of the NFL earlier today. The Jacksonville Jaguars releasing Leonard Fournette. We're going to talk about all things football right now with our next guest, Antoine Staley, who has joined us for the last couple of years to talk football, be it with Athlon Sports or be it with Panthers Wire. We've had Antoine on for the last couple of years. Always enjoy it. Antoine, thank you again for the time today.
Yeah, it's good to be with you again.
All right, well, let's start by talking about the NFL. I know this is your realm, and today Leonard Fournette released from the Jacksonville Jaguars. It's a big deal. This is a big story.
Yeah, especially considering how high he was taken in the 2017 draft. We're talking about somebody that a lot of people compared to Adrian Peterson, thought he would be a surefire pick, a Hall of Famer potentially, and can't miss prospect coming out of LSU. And I mean, he's been good. He has some ups and downs. He's rushed for 1,000 yards a couple of those years, but definitely hasn't lived up to the expectation that I think a lot of people had for him. And you factor in some of the off-the-field stuff, whether it be in the locker room, or you also talk about the injuries that he suffered. And, yeah, it just hasn't been the career I think a lot of people pegged him for. You knew Jacksonville was trying to get rid of him because he wanted to be traded. The Jaguars declined his fifth-year option. They apparently, whether you believe it or not, they couldn't find any trade partners for him, probably because the teams knew that they wanted to trade him, so end up releasing him. So it's definitely not a surprise here. So what's surprising is it just took them this long to get to this point.
Yeah, and really, I mean, you go back and you look at the Jaguars over the last 3 to 4 years. I mean, this was a team that had so much promise. This was a team that should have went to the Super Bowl. I mean, they should have beat the New England Patriots and got to the Super Bowl. And so you think maybe there's a good 3, 4, 5 year span where this team is going to be real competitive in the AFC, and for whatever reason, it hasn't happened. I mean, Leonard Fournette aside, things have just gone really south for this Jaguar team since that AFC championship appearance.
Yeah, you know, and they got it. A lot of that team started with Blake Bortles, and obviously Bortles didn't live up to that expectations after that game. They're a quarter away from beating the Patriots and get to that Super Bowl. Bortles has a bad year after that. He ends up getting replaced, and then you end up trading Jalen Ramsey and a lot of their other players. Calais Campbell's now gone. They've just pretty much derailed that same team that ended up going to the AFC Championship, and now it is with the Fournette thing as well. So, yeah, it's the NFL. It's short time, not for long. I know some people have kind of said that's kind of what it means too. And, yeah, one moment you're close to getting to the Super Bowl, dethroning the Patriots, and now the next moment you're one of those teams that bottom feeder now in the NFL, and probably a team that a lot of people have paid to be the number one, going to have the worst record in the league and number one draft pick come the 2021 draft.
Yeah, because it wasn't just Leonard Fournette. I mean, over the weekend, they also finally traded Ngakoue, and you were wondering when this would actually become a done deal. I mean, it's been rumored for quite some time. They end up moving him on to Minnesota, and again, to me, it's things are really going bad right now in the front office, because in the Ngakoue deal, while they got every penny out of Jalen Ramsey, this was a deal that just went on far too long, and with every passing day, you knew Jacksonville was losing leverage, and this was really a sell-low type deal for the Jags.
Yeah, and the fact that he took a pay cut, essentially, to get out of there, because they had franchised him, and then he took less money to go to Minnesota, and if you factor that in, also with the fact that it's no state tax in Florida, and then he goes to Minnesota where it is state tax, and he's going to make less money in salary, he clearly wanted to get out of there by any means necessary. So it shows you the direction that they're going in. I know a lot of people talked about Doug Marrone wanting to clean up the program and everything like that, but I don't even know if he's going to be there next year either. They're talking about tank. People talk about tanking and whatever the case may be, but I have a hard time believing he's gonna survive this too as well, considering how bad I think they're gonna be. It seems like they're gonna just completely gut. Not only they gut the roster, but I think they're gonna face some big changes as far as their front office too as well.
Again, our guest right now is Antoine Staley as we talk both NFL and college football. Now, Antoine, let's move away from the NFL. Let's dive into college. Again, I mentioned a week away from BYU opening up their season against Navy. College football is so up in the air right now. And I know for someone like yourself who has covered college football in depth for an extremely long time, boy, this has got to be difficult for you. You really don't know what's going to happen week to week.
You don't. I know a lot of people have talked about the season starting coming up, but it's really no buzz to it. I think, like you said, everything's just so up in the air. Schools are going back to virtual learning. I know some schools have tried to have in-person classes, but obviously that hasn't happened. There's a lot of things that are going on as far as people trying to be safe with COVID-19, but that's probably the best way to go. And, yeah, I can't remember a season where it went, you know, obviously with a lot of things going on, it's completely no buzz going on with college football. And I think that's just the reason is because of everything that's going on there and the uncertainty of college football. And also you end up having teams like from the Big Ten and also the Pac-12 also bowing out of the season too as well. I think that has something to do with it there too as well. So yeah, it's I'm curious. I'm a little bit more worried about college football than I am the NFL. It seems like the NFL is doing a good job, at least initially right now, college football. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how long, if at all, they're going to be able to get this kicked off.
Right. I mean, if you get past next Monday's game with BYU and Navy, and I know we have some other games coming up this weekend, but if we really look at week two of the college season, I mean, Clemson at Wake Forest, Oklahoma plays, Notre Dame, Texas, Oklahoma State. I mean, there are some big-name programs that are scheduled to play in week two. I know Central Florida, they've postponed their game, right? So, I mean, just looking at the way everything is looking for week two, some of the big games that we are anticipating are not there. And we didn't have spring ball. And I know for a lot of people, they probably don't pay attention to it. I do. I know you do. And I think it is similar to the NFL preseason. Up until today, the NFL was kind of, I forgot that the NFL was going to pick up in 2 weeks, right? I had to send the broadcast agreement for our Thursday night NFL games last week. I almost forgot, boy, we're 2 weeks away. It's because we didn't have any of the primers that we look for as well.
Yeah, 10 days away. It's crazy, right? Yeah, we're that close to the NFL, Chiefs and Texans kicking off on Thursday night. It's just no hype. It's been so quiet. Teams have just been practicing on their own, kind of staying in their own fortress of solitude, as you will, a little bubble there, whether it be the training camp or not. And some players are staying at hotels too as well, just so they can make sure they remain safe. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this gets headed too as well. I think the NFL has done at least a great job right now. I know it was a lot of skepticism because the NFL wasn't playing in the bubble like some of the other sports, but the thing is the NFL teams are staying in the bubble, their own kind of bubble, and then once they start traveling, then I definitely think that could potentially be an issue. But I definitely think the NFL is taking the proper precautions to make sure that they're going to be able to get this kicked off and have some type of a season. Whether they last the longest, all 16 games or not, I don't know. It remains to be seen. But I definitely think we're going to get a bit bulk of that, at least the NFL this upcoming year.
Well, let's move back to college, and we'll talk about the Big Ten and the Pac-12. I know there were rumblings last week about the Big Ten maybe starting up around Thanksgiving, and I have to believe that if the Big Ten goes that route, the Pac-12 would try to go that route as well in some form or another. And so this could completely change college football. It could definitely change the postseason. Have you heard the rumblings of this and how this would actually work out with the other Power 5 conferences, or what at all?
I guess it would be definitely interesting to see how things work out, because it seems like the Southern schools, Big 12, SEC, ACC, for the most part, they're gonna go on. Like they've taken that notion that they're gonna continue to go on. They believe that they have the ability to have a season and take the proper precaution, where the Big 10 and Pac-12 wanted to wait and see. And It seems like they may wait. Like you say, it could be Thanksgiving. It could be the start of the next year. What hurts them is some of the juniors that are going to declare for the NFL draft. And I know you got a guy like Justin Fields for Ohio State who was hoping to play. But if they start in Thanksgiving, I have to think that he's not going to play at that point. He's going to be getting ready for the NFL draft as some of the other players from both of those conferences as well. And even players that play in the ACC. And I know Jamar Chase from LSU ended up declaring and opting out for LSU yesterday, saying he's going to get ready for the NFL draft too. So I expect players from all the conferences to really take a look and decide what's best for them. So, yeah, it's definitely going to have – this COVID-19 is going to have a big effect on the season and how you look at college football.
No, there's no doubt. There's no doubt. We are gearing up for it again a week from today. BYU will open up the season against Navy. We didn't even know BYU would actually be able to put together a schedule. So I know a lot of fans in Utah are looking forward to that. And then as Antoine just pointed out just a moment ago, we will get NFL football next Thursday right here on KOAL as we open up the season with the Chiefs and the Texans. Antoine, it is always a pleasure to get you on the show. Before I let you go, you got to let the listeners know where they can find you, because I know right now you're all over the place.
You find me at Antoine Staley on Twitter. Also find my work there. Probably the best place to find my work too as well. And if you want to look at some college football, I definitely still do some stuff with Athlon Sports. You can check out my work there too as well.
Antoine, as always, it's a pleasure. Thank you again for the time.
Yeah, thank you.
Again, Antoine Staley taking out the time to join us in talking football, both college and professional. And with that, we are out of time. They went by in a hurry. We'll be back again to do it tomorrow right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Be safe. I am out.